Today, from the Wings Archives.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. Today you will hear talks by Nawal El-Sadawi of Egypt and Ala Shalvi of Israel. Both of these women were speakers on a panel on religion which was part of a conference, Women and the Many Dimensions of Power, held in Montreal, Quebec, the first week of June, 1990. Nawal El-Sadawi is a medical doctor, a prolific writer, and she is founder and president of the Association for Arab Women Solidarity. The title of her talk was Women in the Male World, The Power of Arab Women and the Unveiling of the Mind. Nawal El-Sadawi.
When she was introducing this panel, Giselle Turco said that our mothers and grandmothers could not challenge God. But in fact, my grandmother, who was a poor peasant woman in the village, when I was a child of 5 years old, and I saw her weeping in her room because of poverty and oppression. She was crying and singing for our female goddesses, Ma'at. She was the goddesses of justice. And she said, I remember, because she sang in Arabic, and she said, oh, our goddess, where are you? Where is justice? Please come again, because there is a lot of injustice here in the world. So in fact, my grandmother challenged, and that's why I am challenging. We cannot challenge except somebody in our life put the seed in our mind or in our heart. So my grandmother, who was illiterate, who was poor, who was fighting for life, she was remembering our female goddesses of justice, and this was Ma'at. And I was wondering all the time, why our female goddesses of justice disappeared in history? Why? Why all gods are so domineering, so masculine, so unjust? Why women are inferior in all religions? Why God support dictators, rulers, wealthy people, men, racist, white colonialism, neo-colonial powers? Why God is used to invade other countries? Religion trickle with blood. The more I read about religion, the more I discover that religion trickle with blood. That people, politicians, rulers, governors in the East, in the West, in North, in South, since the evolution of slavery and patriarchy and class, they used God to justify injustices. They used God to invade other countries. They used God to oppress women, young people, and children. Because I have only a few minutes, I would like to concentrate on 2 points. What's the problem of religion in relation to women and what we do? These 2 points. What is the problem of religion? Because people need religion. We need something to believe in. So we cannot fight against faith. People need religion, but people do not need oppression. So how can we solve this problem? What's the problem of existing religions? What's the problem of Islam, of Christianity, of Judaism, of Buddhism, of Hinduism, and even of the so-called now feminist theology? They are trying to separate between spirit and body. And the oppression of women lies in this split between spirit and body, between the body and the mind, between the head and the body. And in fact, since slavery, this division occurred. And God represented the head, the spirit, the mind. Man was created in the image of God. Women was created in the image of Satan, the devil, the body, sexuality. And in this split, we are oppressed. So when women come now and speak about spirituality, they are confirming this split. And I think that really feminism, modern feminism, feminism in our world, which is not only Western, because in our region we have our own feminism also. Feminism really made this integrity between the spirit and the body, between the mind and the body, between thinking and feeling, which is very important, uniting the human being, curing this division. This occurred because of slavery and oppression of the poor, the weak, and women. So this is one of the major problems in relation to religion, the split, the division. The second problem is power. And the conception of power in religion is very oppressive. I'm speaking now not in religion, not as faith in God, as justice and freedom and love, but religion as religious institutions. Because in fact, religion is a political ideology. Religion enters in all domains of life. Religion regulates our politics, our governments, our sexuality, our inheritance, our food, how to sleep, how to do sex. This is religion. So it's a wholesome ideology, political ideology. It's not a spiritual ideology. So we have to be aware of that. But the conception of power in religion is very strange and very oppressive. Why? Because there is a split between power and responsibility. And this is dictatorship. What's the meaning of dictator? It means he dominates, but he's not responsible. When there is a problem, when there is poverty, when there is defeat, he's not responsible. God is responsible of the good. But who is responsible of the evil? It's the devil, not God. This split between responsibility and power created dictatorship, oppression. And man imitated God in this absolute power. Our rulers imitated God in absolute power. So man in the family is powerful, very powerful, but he's not responsible. He can go and remarry. He can have sexual relations. He can break his family. But the woman is responsible, though she has no power. So this separation between power and responsibility is very dangerous. And it's religious because it's political. But we can't change that. One of the major problems also of religion, that it is fixed, unquestionable texts. The word of God is written. Why? Most of the people in the world, especially in my region, are illiterate. So how can people read books, holy books? So we have to correct that. God must be this idea of justice, freedom and love, and not verses, not fixed verses on paper, not books. Because the verse is fixed, you cannot change it, but life is changing. Justice is changing. God is a living being. He should be nameless, with no name. When you give name to something, when I give name to this spectacle, it means it's finished. You give name to something finished, but God is not finished. God is a living being, so he should be nameless. He should be wordless, not written. His word should come to us from inside us, from our heart, from our mind, not from a book. Because God is not like me. I write books, but God should not write books. One of the major problems of religion is obedience. We have to obey. No discussion, no democracy. You obey. The first creative person who disobeyed was Eve, our grandmother Eve. She disobeyed God and she ate from the tree of knowledge. So it seems that there is a contradiction between knowledge and religion. Why religion is against knowledge? Why? So this is also one of the problems in relation to religion. We need knowledge. Knowledge is power. And we have to create knowledge. So we have to disobey, in fact. And this was my problem when I was a child. I had to disobey. I had to identify myself with the devil, with Eve, not with God. And this is a problem, because inside myself, I had this desire for justice, love, and freedom. So what to do? And this was my problem as a person, as a human being, as a woman, during my childhood. And my father was really liberal. And he told me, you just believe in God as justice, freedom, and love. Leave the book. Leave it. And listen to your heart, to your mind. And do what you think is right. That's religion. I would like to say that also one of the major problems in relation to religion is the unequal distribution of power and wealth in the state and in the family. If we study all family codes, Jewish, Christian, Islamic, Buddhist, we find that the men have monopoly over power and wealth. And this is, and the family is the nucleus of the whole society. You find that also in the state. And that's why we cannot deal with a system, ideological system, that do not distribute power and wealth equally between people, regardless of sex or color or race. So to us, when we look to the religious institutions, when we look to the books, in spite of the fact that in the holy books, in the Old Testament or in the Bible or in the Quran, you find very good verses, very human, very just verses that speak about equality between male and female, between poor and rich, that people should, but you find also the opposite. You find the discrimination, racism, you find both in the books. And that's why politicians come and use the verses that oppress people. So in fact, we have two types of religion. The religion of the rulers, of people in power, and they use God as an authoritarian figure, absolute power, no discussion, obey, obedience, unequal distribution, etc. They follow that and they say that's religion. And that's what exactly the fundamentalists are trying to do. And there is another religion of the poor, of women, of the oppressed, and they say, well, this is not so, because there are some verses that are saying people are equal. And this is the battle. This is exactly the battle. The battle between people who are fighting for their life and people who want to exploit the other people, take their land, their country. And this is the battle. And each one is speaking under the name of religion. And that's the problem of religion. It's ambiguity. It's flexibility. It can embrace everything, contradictions. And it allows politicians to play with us under the name of religion. That's why we say the best thing, we have to separate between religion and state. How to get out of that? We have two things. So we say we separate between religion and state. This is good. And the other thing we say, we reread religion. We do our interpretation of religion as women. Women never, though we started, we were female goddesses, but we never had the chance to interpret religion. The third point, that we should be against all religious states, whether Islamic, Christian, or Jewish, or anything. We should be. I was very much against the Khomeini regime, though it was Islamic and though my parents were Islamic. I am very much against the Israeli government, because it's the Jewish fundamental state. I am very much against South African government, because they used Christianity in politics. So we should be against all religious states, and we should separate between religion and state, and that's the role of women internationally, nationally, and individually. And thank you very much.
Nawal El-Saadawi, President of the Association for Arab Women Solidarity. The next speaker is Alice Shalvey of Israel. She is founding president of Israel Women's Network, and she is headmistress of Pelek Religious Experimental High School for Girls. Alice Shalvey.
My point of departure is not only that I am female and feminist, but that I am a Jew trying to live according to the tenets of a religion that has developed over thousands of years, and an Israeli citizen living in a predominantly secular state, which is, however, deeply imbued and inextricably connected with religious tradition and Jewish ethics. Briefly, Judaism is a religion which draws clear distinctions between the respective roles of men and women, basing those distinctions primarily on the biological and physiological differences between the sexes. Man is the breadwinner, woman is the childbearer. Her area of activity is the home and the family. By extrapolation, the public domain is reserved almost exclusively for men. Public domain means civic government. It also, in Judaism, means public worship, which ideally is conducted with a prayer quorum composed of at least 10 males over the age of 13. And as a result of age-old practice, it means spending one's life in the house of study, where the subject matter is exclusively that corpus of oral law, the Talmud, which determines the everyday behavior. Various reasons have been given for women's exemption from what are termed the time-bound positive commandments, among which prayer at fixed times of the day features prominently. But whatever the reasons, the result effectively has been to exclude women from a central feature of Jewish life, synagogue ritual, in which she plays no role whatever. Bearing in mind that the synagogue constitutes the essential framework for Jewish men's life cycle ceremonies, women's marginality in synagogue worship results in a diminishing of her public image and status. In fact, what is today in Israel a crucial factor limiting women's power is not only the circumscription of woman's sphere of activity to the household, but rather the vital addendum to God's distinction between male and female spheres of activity, namely God's determining of hierarchy. And thy desire shall be unto thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. These two combined have had a highly detrimental impact on women's status in modern Israel, a democratic state in which men and women enjoy equal political rights. There is no separation of church and state. Rather, the Orthodox rabbinical establishment has official status, which includes a judicial system of its own based on Jewish law and having exclusive authority on issues such as personal status, that is, marriage and divorce. Israel has no civil marriage or divorce, and male power in this area, though gradually modified by rabbinical edict over the course of centuries, is still far superior to woman's. In addition, Israel's wide-ranging political spectrum includes a number of religious political parties whose power has grown continuously during the 42 years of statehood and who hold the balance of power in our parliaments. The religious parties have been able to exact a heavy price in return for entering into coalitions which would enable either the socialist left or the nationalist right to rule the country. Here are some concrete examples of the effect on Jewish women's status in Israel. In 1986, Leah Shachdiel was elected to serve as a member of her local religious services council, responsible for ensuring adequate facilities for all local residents to observe and practice various religious laws, as well as to provide burial facilities and marriage registration, two services which even the least religiously observant citizen is liable to require. Though she is an observant and highly knowledgeable Jew, Leah Shachdiel is also a woman. As a result, the chief rabbinate refused to ratify her election, though it had raised no objection to the appointment of totally non-religious males. It took over 2 years of protest and litigation before the Israel Supreme Court ruled that Leah Shakti-El must be permitted to take the seat to which she had been democratically elected. In 1988, when the city of Tel Aviv had to appoint a municipal chief rabbi, the prime candidate openly declared that he would withdraw his candidacy if there were a woman on the electoral board. As a result of this threat, the city council voted to exclude women from the electoral board. Once again, an appeal to the Supreme Court resulted in nullification of the decision. In the course of coalition negotiations following the November 1988 general elections, one of only two members of Knesset representing a tiny ultra-Orthodox party indicated that his party would not join a government that included a woman. And indeed, there has not been a single woman cabinet member since those elections. That same month, November 88, a group of women attending the first International Jewish Feminist Conference in Jerusalem were violently abused when they attempted to hold a women's prayer service at the Western Wall, which has been turned into an open-air synagogue by the Ministry for Religious Affairs. Given the Ministry of Religious Affairs' legally established exclusive rights in the matter, we are pessimistic as to the legal outcome. A far more vexed topic is that of the rabbinical courts and their sole jurisdiction in personal law, particularly divorce. This is a complex matter, and I lack the time to address it as fully as is necessary. Suffice it here to say that because the judges are all men and are increasingly drawn from the ultra-Orthodox world, their decisions are frequently detrimental or even hostile to women. Furthermore, there is a distressing refrain from imposing those sanctions on recalcitrant husbands, those who refuse to give a divorce, which halakha, our code of oral law, actually permits. Thousands of Jewish women in Israel and elsewhere are prevented from remarrying and establishing families because their husbands refuse to give them a divorce, even though divorce has been officially ruled by a religious court. What I think it is vital to stress is that halakha, oral law, is far more compassionate than current rabbinic practice of it. The fault is not with Jewish law, certainly I think not with God, but with the male judges who in Israel currently interpret and impose that law. To balance this gloomy picture of male exploitation of religious power to the detriment of women's rights and status, I'm happy to report on considerable feminist action, a promising resistance movement spearheaded by the Israel Women's Network and other women's organizations who have rallied round women prepared to challenge the male and male chauvinist hegemony. The prime requisite for change is women's awareness of the ways in which they are being discriminated against and a readiness to resist and shake off male domination. Leah Shakti-El was a noble pioneer, and the women members of the Tel Aviv City Council certainly drew inspiration and encouragement from her prolonged fight and ultimate victory. Separatism is a possible method of action. In the municipal elections of 1989, the women members of the National Religious Party responded to their male colleagues' refusal to place a woman on the party's list of candidates by running a separate list of women only, arousing support not only from their own followers, but even from men and women who would never normally vote for the National Religious Party. The women's list did better than the men's list from which they had seceded, thus providing a salutary lesson for the future. Litigation has proved most effective, given the outstanding regard for human rights and democratic principles consistently displayed by Israel's Supreme Court. It is, however, a costly mode of attaining one's ends, as well as a fairly drawn-out procedure. Legislation can also be of use, though the stranglehold which the religious parties exercise on Israel's parliament is hard to overcome. The Israel Women's Network recently presented to a parliamentary committee our proposals for legislation which could remedy the rabbinical court's disregard for women in divorce proceedings by permitting the civil courts to intervene after a suitable period has elapsed. Now, energetic lobbying must follow in order to win over the requisite number of supporters for such legislation. Lobbying, education, and consciousness raising need to be developed and perfected if we are to bring about significant and permanent change. Ignorance results in our wasting energy on futile explosions of frustrated rage. Women must reclaim the area of religious study and analysis or reinterpretation of all traditional texts from the Bible on. Networking has proved another essential link in the chain of resistance and revolt. Networking can and should be not only with other women, but with male individuals or organizations known to share our goals of equality and freedom. Ad hoc alliances with other organizations have proved most effective. Jewish feminists everywhere are supporting the court action brought by the Women of the Wall, and we plan an international consultation of Jewish women to learn from each other what measures are being taken regarding the worldwide problem of Jewish divorce. Our greatest legislative successes have resulted from finding Knesset members from usually opposing parties prepared to co-sponsor a specific legislative proposal and muster the support of their respective parties. Creating close ties with the media is also of vital importance. Nothing is accomplished if it is not known to have been accomplished. Finally, the most important work must be in the area of consciousness raising and education, of women themselves, of the public at large, of judges, legislators, and even of the rabbis. It is our primary duty to ensure that everybody realizes the nature and the extent of religious discrimination against women. A process of enlightenment, by whatever methods it is induced, is the prerequisite for change of any kind, whether that change be revolutionary or evolutionary. It is a process which Israeli women have most definitely begun, and it is the one in which we should persist despite the overwhelming political problems, both internal and external, with which our cause is faced. For what inspires us, and particularly those of us like myself, who are religiously observant and do not want to throw out the baby of spirituality and participation with the very dirty bathwater of religious politics, is the prelapsarian vision of paradisiac equality encapsulated in Genesis's first description of the creation of humankind.
Alice Shavi, founding president of Israel Women's Network. Alice Shavi and Nawal El-Sadawi were recorded June 7, 1990 in Montreal, Quebec. They were both speakers on a panel on religion at a conference sponsored by FRAP, Women for Access to Political and Economic Power. Reporting for Wings, I'm Catherine Davenport.
To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or check our page at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks Genevieve Vaughn, Suzette Cullen, and your local community radio station. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.